Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
There is a certain segment of the Dem population that understands that the left is the enemy, and there's another segment of the Dem population that is completely unaware that the left and the liberals are different groups. The Obama regime did not understand the difference because they were so committed to the corporate world that they merely wanted to win, and they saw everybody center left as we need their vote. Very pragmatic approach. The Hillary Clintons of the world and the Joe Bidens of the world hate the left, and they went out of their way to ensure that the left was stomped on to the greatest extent possible. So in this new day and age where Joe Biden is president and he is appointing all of the anti-left ghouls to the cabinet positions such as Neera Tanden, what do we do on the left?
First of all, I'm not laughing at Neera Tanden because it's actually pretty fucked up, but I did read, and I'm trying to find the head card right now, like CNN, progressives are picking their fights with Biden. Neera Tanden's nomination likely won't be won. Biden stands by OMB director Neera Tanden. There's one that said, I saw this today. It was like, outed sexually harassed Neera Tanden is joining Biden's candidacy. So they've already ramped up the manufacturer consent to basically take away any type of argument you had. It's almost like the anti-Semitism thing. Like, if you criticize her, you're criticizing someone who was sexually harassed, right? And they're already saying, well, the left isn't going to fight this on this one. So if you're reading this and you're left, you're like, I'm not going to fight him on this one? Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. But what it's doing is it's defanging the more liberal, I hate the word progressive, right? We know that. We hate the word progressive. But the more left of center liberal. It's defanging them, saying, oh, well, I guess if their left isn't going to fight her, she must be a fucking okay pick.
Oh, we'll just ram her through, and it means that John Cornyn doesn't like her, so she must be good.
She must be good because he's an asshole. And the other part that's really fascinating right now is, like, Trump hasn't conceded. Trump has said stuff like, I will leave if the Electoral College votes me out. He has said just bonkers ass things where on Trump's side, he's like, I'm president until January. Like, you don't get to transition anything. And it's actually pretty crazy because there's not even a full Senate yet. We don't even know who's going to be there.
Right. You have the two cases in Georgia that are still pending and Trump's threatening to boycott the elections and like ensure that the Republicans lose, which is totally dumb and not self-serving, but he's an idiot.
And everybody should know that Neera Tanden is the CEO of the Center for American Progress, which is basically a neoliberal capital think tank. The word progressive means nothing in there. It's stuff like, we should let Nestle bottle water and sell it to the poor at a discounted rate. That's where the terms like affordable healthcare or access to affordable healthcare come from. That type of doublespeak comes from this giant ass Center for American Progress. It is not a liberal. It's not even liberal. It's a moderately conservative, right of center think tank. The only thing it doesn't do is execute poor people as much as like
as much as it might want to. They
as much as the Heritage Foundation. Yeah, exactly.
But she was also involved in the I'm going to say incursion into Libya that resulted in an untold number of casualties. And her big plan was to, we're going to charge Libya for the oil to pay for the war where we completely invaded their sovereignty.
We violated international law, and now you owe us money for that.
Yeah, we're going to seize your oil money.
I ran my car into your house while I was drunk, and now you owe me a new car. Oh, okay, that's cool. What's actually weird about this, too, is that like Tom Cotton and other right-wing ghouls are fighting her nomination without the actual understanding that it's probably one of the best picks for them.
Well, they might understand that, too, because then they can peer bipartisan by allowing it or something. I don't know. I don't know what the play is. I don't know why you would fight her if you're a Republican.
God damn, she's a nasty conservative. Anyways, so what can the left do? The left can make sure they do a few things. One is to stay vigilant and active and knowing that it's going to be a time to actually fight and put energy into stuff. And number two, it's not join some shit-lib group like the DSA that's just basically distractions for leftists. The DSA puts so much energy in pretending that they do anything that it just wastes actual time of leftists. Leftists could just be reading theory and have more impact on the daily life of other people than anything the DSA has ever done.
In the 2020 election cycle, what did the DSA actually do? And now they frame themselves as a non-electoral, non-political party, but they still went out of their way to do endorsements. Did any of their endorsements actually amount to anything? Or was it simply just them posturing and choosing people that were already going to win?
They don't seem to understand electoralism at all, because they just picked people that were already going to win. And not only are they going to win, they picked the most benign races to be in. And just this last month, one of their DSA people from one of the wards in Chicago wasn't going to vote to defund the police. So even if they get somebody in power, and even if they have a somewhat of a majority of power, they capitulate and allow the exact same policies I guess they're fighting against to happen. What's the party going to do? Expel somebody who's just going to become a Democrat? It wasn't like they helped them win.
Right. They generated no soft power to the extent that this person felt as though he could bite off the DSA and still electorally be okay. They conveyed no electoral ramifications as a result of this person saying, screw you guys. I know you helped me in air quotes win, but I don't need you anymore.
Yeah, you let me put your initials after my name, and people conflated that with actual policy change, and they voted me in because you actually have no mechanisms for endorsement or party change, but you pretend to be part of the electoral system. So far, we've said that they are able to elect people in, and no one cares, and they hold no national seats, attorney general seats, nothing. So I don't actually know what they've done so far in 2020.
You would be shocked to hear that they endorsed the Austin, Texas City Council District 4 candidate, and that person won by 40%. And then they didn't endorse the other four seats that were up for election. And so it's like, well, congratulations, you have one person on a 10-person city council district that you endorsed. But who cares? What does that accomplish? And the guy won by 40%. So clearly your endorsement didn't mean anything.
I'm actually flummoxed by this endorsement, because normally an endorsement is designed to push you over the edge or at least show some sort of solidarity with the candidate, with some sort of fight or, some cause. And hearing that this person was going to win anyways, that's cool. I mean, that's a good way to fundraise. But if you really don't truly understand a centrally planned endorsement cycle, you have no chance of actually gaining power. And this is, again, what the DSA does. They just endorse people that think they're going to win. They raise money to spend on something. I don't know what. And then we end up with this, a plus 40.
So what should have happened is the DSA should have endorsed this individual, and they win. Great. And they should have also endorsed four other individuals that were running for the Austin, Texas City Council. Even if they don't win, you're still staking a claim to this is the outcome we want, rather than just saying, well, this guy's going to win anyways, so we're going to try and hitch our wagon to him, even though we have no actual soft power, which we just kind of talked about as a pattern that happened in Chicago.
Yeah. So how many endorsements did they do total?
I don't know what the actual number is, but it appears to be relatively few. And one of the things about the DSA is that it's very compartmentalized, which is good. There's locality where each, let's say, major city has an organization affiliated with the DSA. So you have your Philadelphia DSA, you have your Chicago DSA, you have your Seattle DSA, you have your Portland DSA. And each one of those groups endorses, some number of candidates.
Mm-hmm.
It appears as though they're fairly selective in who they endorse, where they'll only endorse a socialist, which leads to a relatively few number of endorsements, and also leads to very few wins and defeats. But if you're only choosing candidates that are only going to win, it looks like you're endorsing at a high rate and your endorsement is very powerful. But I don't think that's actually the case.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing statewide endorsements. If you want to play the electoral game, you, to some extent, need to be playing the lesser of two evils game as well. in a spreadsheet I found online, and I'm not saying this is complete in any way, shape, or form, there were roughly 29 endorsements of DSA-affiliated groups in 34 states. So the fact that 34 states don't have DSA-affiliated endorsements to some extent implies that the group doesn't actually engage in endorsements or electoralism, which is fine. But at the same time, you can't turn around and say that your entity is playing the political game and you have power and you're staking your claim as being an institution that somehow affects the electorate. You can't have it both ways. You're either a non-electoral group.
Yeah, good. Okay.
Or you don't. But like, choose something and be good at it. Don't try and be everything to everybody because you have this mismatch of random members that don't really know what they're doing.
Yeah, you know, it takes more than just saying you're going to be the DSA. It does actually take training. It does actually take leadership. It does actually take members showing up, and I hate to say the word committee, but understanding what electoralism is. And it takes understanding that we champion local here, and we want people to be ready to be local. We want that. This is what we want. We want local first, then state, and then federal. But what becomes distracting is that the party itself isn't, like you said, committed to that local strategy.
They're attempting to run a national party with localized satellite sites rather than going the opposite direction, which is hyper-local and playing in everything locally, which is evidenced by them endorsing only one district in Austin. Endorse everything. Like it, even if you're like picking a ghoul, like one ghoul is better than the other, play the electoral game.
Yeah, here's how this works. If you are thinking about, you know, you guys are being assholes, DSA is great. That's fine. You can call us assholes. The DSA is great. Whatever.
Our sponsors aren't going to drop us.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Our non-sponsors is not going to get mad at us about this. The issue comes down to if the DSA was really a party that had something of power. We're talking about Texas here that had people that didn't even vote, that Biden lost by a couple percent. But how do you engage and make that state bluer? You have an actual magnetic force pulling people to the left and engaging and pulling out. You don't have to do any endorsements to Biden. You don't have to do anything federal. You don't have to do, you know, if you don't want to at the state level, you can do local only endorsements, but you can locally endorse the entire state. It, even if you have to kiss the ring of the Democratic Party, you at least get people out to vote. And in fact, you can do things like put two challengers up that are DSA endorsed and then endorse another two Democrats. And if you push over and you take a red district and make it a little bluer, you've done more than endorsing fucking 29 randos.
That are going to win anyway.
Right. And not even participate in 34 states. You know, so what does your $120 a year go to?
Well, let's take a look at what the DSA has been up to in the form of their fall 2020 newsletter. They published an article talking about the importance of the U.S. Postal Service. And part of the thing that they did was they went to the Kalamazoo, Michigan National Rural Letter Carriers Association and said that we are here to assist with organizing, publicizing, making signs, bringing materials, showing up, taking pictures, and writing a report on it. So they wrote a report about having attendees hold signs and masks that said, "Save our postal service." So if you don't think they're engaged electorally or non-electorally, they made signs and wrote a report on it.
In Kalamazoo, which has like, what, 30,000 people in it?
Oh, but they also sent postcards to Debbie Stabenow and Gary Peters and the White House seeking emergency funding of the USPS. This was on page 3 of their fall newsletter.
Well, okay, we talked about this before. The post office is important. Rural America will be fucked. About the post office. Absolutely. The cost of their medicine is going to go up because you can't ship diabetes medicine to rural America if it costs more money. I mean, think about simple things like that, right? It doesn't matter if you can't get the new iPhone overnight. Who gives a shit about that? But I mean, there is real life consequences to not being able to ship something into rural America with the same care and priority as a city, right? Because that's the idea. The idea is that everybody is equal in this institution. And that's the way that federal and state institution should be is that everybody's given the fair shake. Everybody is the same. But when you end up with tiered systems, you end up with the neoliberal idea, you end up with this for-profit idea, you get screwed over with the tiering. People are going to be tiered out. But I don't understand how this moved the needle on anything when it comes to USPS.
No idea. So this was done by the Southwest Michigan DSA.
And it was so important they put it in the national newsletter.
It was in the national DSA newsletter.
Here's the thing about encouragement, discouragement. We don't want to discourage local groups from being active. But at the same time, you need to encourage them to do something that is of benefit.
Are you telling me that the report was not beneficial?
What I'm telling you is the report is really beneficial for, I don't know if you're sure where Kalamazoo is, middle of Michigan?
I don't know.
It's consequential to the people that are semi-local there, okay? But unless you're doing this report at a centrally planned national level in which every single local chapter has been assigned the task of going out and writing an article on it and having a concerted effort, like every single state DSA must write letters to their senator. And even then, it doesn't matter because letter writing campaigns don't matter. But at least it shows a national effort.
The Southwest Michigan DSA undertook local action that would have a giant federal consequence with absolutely no central planning help from the parent larger national DSA entity. Is that accurate?
That's accurate.
So that's a complete waste of time, right?
Because they can't affect anything nationally at their level.
Right. So the Southwest Michigan DSA should have been focused on actions that actually impact their local area.
100%. The USPS is an important institution that needs to be fought at the national level with the entire national body of the DSA.
So if the DSA wanted to push this, they would have in some way, shape, or form mandated or assisted that each of their local chapters through central planning would have said, hey, we're going to make a big push to state to everybody in every local chapter that the DSA cares about the Postal Service and this is why the Postal Service is important. And it's a national campaign, and it's carried out by each local DSA. But they didn't do that. A local entity attempted to bubble up a federal issue, but doing it at the local, like, it just makes no sense. It's a complete misallocation of resources.
There's absolutely, again, we tell this all the time, there's absolutely no way a local institution can affect a national one. There is things like making noise and getting your news out there and just encouraging people to do action. That group would have been better off choosing something like a mass campaign for elderly people or a food running campaign for elderly people or food banks for elderly people in rural America. Because rural America has an aging demographic. They're being affected right now by COVID.
They're being affected by the post office sucking.
By the post office sucking. You can make your own post office if you want to. It doesn't matter. What we're getting at, though, is that the DSA, let's not pretend anymore, to us, is a waste of time if you're a leftist. Absolutely. Because what happens is you spend all this time doing inconsequential things, hoping that it makes a difference. And we just saw that with the Kalamazoo idea. Now, we, two of us, don't have a party to make you or have you donate time to.
We don't want a party. We want you to go do your shit locally.
Yeah, and not worry about it. If you want to work on federal shit, work on federal stuff, but it has to be concerted with another 20,000 people federally. And you can see this is a scaling issue. Anybody that understands scaling knows that it's easy to go local first and then take your steps upwards. It's hard to just jump right into a national campaign. There's just no way to do it because every state's different. Everybody's different. It's if you're in a red state, you're not going to convince your senator to do anything about it. Your only hope is to push on blue senators, right? It's just the way it is. We could take all types of campaigns like this. There's a lot more for rural America out there. You could have asked at the state level for more farm subsidies. You could have asked the attorneys general or the governor to write a letter saying that they're afraid of what's going to happen to the post office. Because the letter from the governor is going to be a lot more attractive than 1,000 letters to Debbie Stabenow, who I don't know. She's still alive? I have no idea.
Are you telling me that... The DSA engaged in a letter writing campaign to a dead senator.
Just asking, like, what is she doing? What does Gary Peters do? I mean, there are two senators you don't even hear about. The DSA got one thing right, and they actually wrote letters to the ranking member of the minority party for the USPS, which is Gary Peters, who is on the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. All right. With that said, these are the other ghouls that are on this committee. Ron Johnson from Wisconsin is the majority ranking member. Rob Portman, Rand Paul, Mitt Romney, James Lankford, Rick Scott, who doesn't give a shit about anybody, Michael Enzi, and Josh Hawley. And then you go to the minority side, and it gets even better. Thomas Carper, never heard of them. Margaret Wood Hansen, or Hassan. Kirsten Sinema. And then Kamala Harris, or is it Kamala?
Or is it Kamala?
Sorry. And Kamala Harris. And then finally, Jackie Rosen. So you have people on here that are just don't give a shit about the post office. I mean, maybe Mitt Romney is somewhere to say you can't get mail, but he's a billionaire. He doesn't care. Rick Scott doesn't care. He's a billionaire.
Nobody on the committee cares about the post office, because if they cared about the post office, they would have fixed the post office problem.
So writing the senator is not going to help you. Nobody cares. And writing the minority senator means what? He's going to be able to do what? Hold a committee to have a bill passed for emergency funding that's going to make its way to the Senate floor, and Mitch McConnell's going to
throw it away.
He's going to bring it up into the House or the body, and the body's not going to amend it. And they're going to vote on it and pass it and push it over to the House. But the problem is that all spending bills must originate in the House per the Constitution. And then the House passes the bill, then has to go back to the Senate to be revamped, and then goes to Trump, who wants to then say the post office. I mean, that's structurally what they're asking for.
Are you telling me this is a complete waste of time?
Absolutely, a complete waste of time. I would ask you what's the requirements to get this passed? So you'd have to bring it up to the committee. The committee would have to vote for it on a bill level to go into some funding stream. Or Gary Peters would have to submit an amendment to an already existing bill that was on the floor for debate to increase funding somehow. Then have that voted by a majority in the Senate, and then pushed into another bill, and then have a counterpart in the House that does the same exact amendment that gets passed in the House, and then together pass that when this gets reconciled and not get removed into the White House to get signed. I mean, that's the fastest route, is introduce an amendment. But that's never going to happen. The USPS is never going to see light of day. It's pretty much baked.
It doesn't mean that the DSA shouldn't try and care about the USPS, but they should care about it in a way that actually affect something. And as you just laid out, none of the 100,000 steps are viable for the Southwest Michigan DSA. So expend your resources locally. Now, when you're expanding your resources locally, do not do what the DSA does with what they are calling phone zaps.
What the fuck's a phone zap?
A phone zap is where you gather a collection of individuals and you do phone calls to elected officials periodically throughout the day to raise awareness in air quotes about your cause. I'm not really sure how this benefits anything.
I don't even know why a grown person would call it a zap.
What's a phone zap? It's a one-day zap. We had our 50 people would participate and call a city council member every 10 minutes to raise awareness about an issue. Why wouldn't that be effective?
Do they answer?
I don't have that information.
Did they screen the phone number?
Like at some point, if you get called every 10 minutes, you don't just keep answering your phone, right?
Or well, do you? I don't know how many people that are in city council that are that size that are like, I'm just sitting next to my phone waiting for a phone call.
And if somebody were to call you every 10 minutes, you wouldn't pick up and go, hi, this is Councilman blah.
Or I might. I don't know. I'm a psychopath. I might just sit there and talk to them. Because waste their fucking time. I'm getting paid to sit around and do nothing, councilman.
Well, you're probably a part-time council person who's, like, at work doing, like, a different job, and you're doing your council member's job on the side. So this DSA group, who you obviously know who they are, is calling you every 10 minutes when you're, like, sitting in a corporate setting working for Capital, right?
Yeah, but then the other way around, like, okay, so you're calling every 10 minutes, like, how does that benefit the council member to work with you?
Oh, it doesn't at all, right? It completely disincentivizes and alienates this person. Like, it's annoying as fuck.
So why would I ever champion your bill? I mean, in talking about change management, if there's no agreement on either side that change must occur, it's never going to happen. And they don't have the power to hit you with the head with a hammer. So it is what it is, which is just a waste of energy. Again, it's a waste of fucking energy. It's a waste of fucking time.
You're wasting time of the 50 people that are calling every 10 minutes.
It's a waste of fucking time.
Minutes, resources, time. You could be doing something useful.
You could have fucking driven your car and parked in front of City Hall and ran out of gas and blocked people's ability to drive downtown and been more beneficial than calling somebody. That's a legitimate tactic they use in Argentina, to run out of gas. You can run out of gas. Just do that. You could, in the time you spent there, you could literally find out how to spin up a cloud instance in like Thailand, buy yourself a phone number in Thailand, and auto call these people continuously.
Every 10 minutes, phone call would cost like a cent.
Yeah.
And it would cost you a grand total of $2 to do this for a day or something.
Yeah, and $13 because you had to lease the phone number.
You annoyed the person you were calling. You wasted the time of the 50 callers participating in this stunt. It could have been automated. And what actually was accomplished?
Nothing. I don't know. I didn't hear anything about it. We're just going to have to summarize this last little bit here for myself. Fuck the DSA in all of its misguided distraction nonsense. Electoralism doesn't work. Or does it work? I don't know, because they do both. They say it does and doesn't work. I'm not 100% sure. The people that write for them also write in other magazines that make no sense. They either can be activists or not be activists. It doesn't matter. It's the DSA. We're either going to endorse you or not endorse you. It doesn't matter. We're the DSA. We're going to zap you, I guess, and that's cool. It's like a bunch of Boy Scouts with no troop leader. They just run around and start fires everywhere, and it's uncontained, and there's nothing that's happening. And how was your weekend? It was great. It rained.
And sometimes chaos is good, but they're not even creating chaos.
You know, I'm a believer that chaos is required for change, but chaos requires actual chaos.
Not just calling somebody for a day and having them mute their phone.
Yeah, it requires you going on the internet and searching how to make my horn automatically go off and locking your keys in the car. And having your horn automatically go off while it's parked outside of the city building. Because everything that you just did was an accident. That's what it requires. Like, that's pure chaos. Right? Oh, I don't know what happened. I guess my battery went dead and my fucking horn went off for 25 minutes. I'm sorry. Sorry, it's 4:00 in the morning. And this is your registered address by looking up people's addresses on the MLS databases and county tax records. I mean, it's not that fucking hard.
Another thing that the DSA does a poor job of is actually advocating for what democratic socialism is, which is less than socialism. But still, democratic socialism at its face would be an improvement over the neoliberal hellscape that we live in currently. So let's take a look at how they define democratic socialism. This is a quote from their website in the About section of the What is Democratic Socialism? This is a quote. For now, the burden should be placed on the employer to make work desirable by raising wages, offering benefits, and improving the work environment.
Now it is. Like, right now it is?
Yes. Like, right now that's on their website.
But not only is it on their website right now, but they're saying that the burden, that the way we've done labor in the last 250 years should suddenly change, and the employer should just give it away?
The employer should make work desirable.
Oh, okay. Because when I shit on the floor and someone has to come clean it up, I bet they desire to do that. This doesn't make any sense. This is an actual neoliberal position. This is an actual pro-capitalist position here by making it so that the employer still owns and has control over the worker. Because all it's saying is doing is manipulate the employee so that it appears to them that their life is better by working there. It is not an actual policy for change. It says, just keep doing what you're doing, but now maybe you should give the employees shirts.
So this is under the subsection of the frequently asked questions of, won't socialism be impractical because people will lose their incentive to work?
First of all, no one has incentive to work. The only incentive they have is a gun to the head because they have to eat. Second, individuals will be able to do what they want and need for society, even though things have to get done. This is absolutely insane. See, this is why we're saying fuck the DSA, because when you unwrap it It's just like the Center for American Progress. The words say that there's something on the name, but the context and what they believe in is just the status quo and exactly the same thing. It's a name only. It has no actual meaning. It has no meaning. That's circular logic. That's like saying I don't even understand it. I'm so mad right now that's on their website. By the way, I haven't read this. I'm being read this, and I am actually mad that someone who has the word socialism in their name is like saying, oh, it's okay. As long as they don't turn the volume up to 12 on the intercom, it's fine. That's desirable. I mean, if I don't smell like the pig blood in a meatpacking factory, I guess it's desirable to work there. Doesn't make any fucking sense. Do I really desire to sand drywall all day until my hands hurt? No, it's not fucking desirable.
Here's another nugget, another question in their FAQ. Aren't you a party that's in competition with the Democratic Party for votes and support? And this is the DSA's response. We hope that at some point in the future, in coalition with our allies, an alternate national party will be viable. For now, we will continue to support progressives who have a real chance at winning elections, which usually means left-wing Democrats.
Oh, that's a lie.
We want to board the electoralism train by supporting people that are going to win already, which is left-wing
and
Democrats.
And there's no such thing as a leftist Democrat. That doesn't exist. This is like, again, this is written by adults who read Capital in German who don't read German. This is people who watch a YouTube video from like PragerU who think they understand Marxist theory or socialist theory. Socialism, again, is the ability to try to move the needle through electoralism. And yet the electoralism that they're choosing is sitting on their thumbs or their hands and seeing who wins and pretending that they supported the winner when they win.
What we're saying is you should either engage in electoralism and attempt to actually choose a winner. That might mean stomping out conservatives and choosing the lesser of two evils locally. Whatever. It's engage in electoralism, develop some soft power through endorsements. Or you have to be completely ideologically committed, not engage in electoralism, and militantly commit to a dogma, a manifesto, a set of criteria. But this middle ground that they're currently occupying is absolutely worthless.
It's worthless. It's like this worst place you could be. The Democrats, the Republicans know who they are. The Libertarians know who they are. They did not. The Tea Party did not deviate from this, right? They were dog shit crazy ideologues, and they won because they stuck to their guns and they brought forth coalitions of insane people who saw the power they were bringing. Now, was a lot of it bought? Yes. Was a lot of it just anger and falsehoods? Yes. But they had a message. People were excited for them, and it worked. When you just have this insanity, nothing works. It just does. This is so fucking mind-boggling, insane. And the crazy part is there's a lot of leftists out there who listen to other podcasts who they love the DSA.
Other inferior podcasts, right?
Don't tell your friends. Man, I hate the DSA now more than ever. It's like, here's the fact. Don't you compete with Democrats for votes? No, because nobody will vote for us. I mean, that would be a much better answer than what they gave. No, we don't like elections. No, we don't care anymore. We're going to go make community gardens because that has a better that's more beneficial than voting.
And that's a legitimate position to hold, and it's all about resource allocation.
100%. It comes down to this. It's basically the test of whether or not NC is effective. Can they force an opposition to expend resources? The answer is no. The DSA is useless. They can't. They can't force Democrats to hold their own turf, and they can't force conservatives to fight back. They've done nothing for power. They can exhibit no power. They have no effective behavior. There is nobody who's writing a counter article about the DSA. Right, there's no counter newsletter. There's no how we're different. There's nothing. They have no power. If they did, the Tea Party would hate on them every single day. Or the conservatives would hate on them every day. The DSA isn't even brought up because the DSA have no power.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.